Today I talk with Irish professional cyclist Alice Sharp. Let's cue that intro.
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Roadman, welcome back to another Roadman Cycling Podcast. I've got another interview for you today. I've got Irish professional road cyclist and track specialist Alice Sharp. We get into it. We talk about the financial burden that PCR tests placed on riders last year as they tried to travel around the globe and navigate the changing environment of COVID-19. We talk about what it's like to be a professional female cyclist, the challenges of penetrating a male-dominated environment, and the Irish track team and the amazing progress they've made over the last few years, and how Alice is so central to all that. You're going to love today's episode. Before I dive into it, just a reminder, we've changed the format up slightly. We used to be 5 days a week on the podcast, but now we're going 4 days a week, and one of the episodes is going to be a Patreon only episode. We're calling it the Secret Podcast. So once a week there's going to be a Patreon only episode, and that's just a tip to cap and a say thank you to everyone that's supporting us over on Patreon. So if you'd like to get access to the Secret Podcast each week, all it's going to cost you is the price of a pint of beer once a month. So if you'd see me down the pub and you'd say, you know what, I'm enjoying this podcast, your man's all right, or your man's a bit of a dick, but I kind of enjoy listening to him. Either way, I'll buy him a pint. If you want to buy me that pint, all you got to do is head on over to www.patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh. The link is in the description. Click on that. It takes like 2 seconds to sign up. You buy me the price of a pint once a month, and you'll get a secret RSS feed, which basically means you're going to have a new podcast once a week coming straight into your ears. This week, I just dropped it yesterday, and this week I talk about why you're mentally fatigued all the time. I talk about decision-making fatigue. We're making roughly 30,000 decisions a day. So I talk about 4 strategies you can use to avoid decision-making fatigue, to make sure you're saving that decision-making muscle for the big important decisions in your life. You're going to enjoy it. But without further ado, let me welcome to the Roadman Cycling Podcast, Alice Sharp.
Oh, thank you. Excited to be here.
I'm excited to chat, and let's hope your dodgy Mallorcan Wi-Fi holds up.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm not that hopeful. We have like a power cut a week, so we'll see.
Solid infrastructure.
Yeah, it really is.
Lucky the cycling's good out there if the Wi-Fi is not good.
Yeah, no, we are lucky. I think this is, yeah, my favourite place to be riding. We're lucky to get to spend so much time out here, and the weather's been kind to us as well.
You know what, I often go back and forth on where's my favourite place to ride, and I love Mallorca, but I always just come back to Girona, and I think it's because I think the riding is actually nicer in Mallorca, but mm-hmm. It's just when you finish in the evening time is why Girona always edges it for me. Like Mallorca's just, it's like being in fucking, like a leaving cert holiday or something. All right, may you want sangria.
I think we're in a different part of the island to that. There's no sangria here.
Yeah, and all you've got like one cafe up there. I assume you're up near Cycling Planet, are you?
Yeah, we're in Alaro. So yeah, there's Cycling Planet. There's a few other cafes, but yeah, that's the one we all tend to float down to.
It's quiet,
but I know I've never actually been to Girona. I feel like I'm not cool enough to go there. I have to stick to Mallorca.
you're definitely cool enough to go there.
Thanks.
I want to start with kind of a random chat for a cycling podcast, but I'm not sure how much you've been following the news, but big news in Ireland. There was a young girl, I'm going to say she was 22 or 23, out running last week.
Yeah.
And she was attacked and killed out running. And it was mm-hmm. only chatting to a friend of mine that was a girl, and she was like listing all the things you do as a female runner. And she's like, basically, if you don't know about this stuff, it's because you're a man. And she's like, it's things like when you run past somebody and they're going the other direction, you lower down your headphones to make sure he hasn't turned around and is following you. When you see somebody on the sidewalk on the same side as you, you change sides. Like mm-hmm. all these tactics around, you know, staying safe that I was completely oblivious to.
is this whole issue of women's safety, does it extend beyond running into cycling as well? And I'm also completely oblivious to this, if so.
Yeah, I'd agree to an extent, but I think, yeah, running leaves you a bit more, well, I feel more vulnerable if I'd be out running. Just, I think with your bike, you feel like that is an extra means to kind of get away from a situation. But yeah, I still think you would check around. And if someone was following you a long way, then I would feel nervous about it in the same way. Like your friends are saying, when you're out running, you'd be checking around behind you and stuff. But I've been lucky not to encounter anything that I felt too unsafe about. But yeah, I think it's the element that you feel like you could perhaps ride away from them.
Is it like if you're out on a solo ride and there's a male cyclist like 10 bike lengths back for a prolonged period of time, is there a little bit of an alarm bell going off in your head?
Not usually, actually. And perhaps that's because I've never felt like I've been in a situation that's been too scary. So perhaps that could be me being naive and thinking like, oh, sure, all cyclists are friendly. But yeah, I suppose it can be a random attacker with a different agenda to a guy just riding behind you wanting to catch up and be like, oh, hey. Because that would be my instinct to think that it was just, you know, another person out on a spin and they're going to have a chat to you.
Yeah, I think as you're definitely shaped by experiences like that. And it's probably, you know, a large reason why, you know, I'm completely oblivious. And I think a good portion of lads are completely oblivious to that extra safety and security dimension that girls have to face.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, I guess it's good to like to have it raised as a conversation, just like you're saying, you're completely oblivious to it. If everybody shares their experiences and opinions, like it would educate everybody and yeah, hopefully make things a bit safer.
Because it got me thinking around the Strava culture and, you know, and there's, you know, there's a, I suppose that's something else I want to touch on as well, because the track team you're on, for better or worse, it seems like a lot of the girls are quite focused on social media, and you know, that's a double-edged sword, I feel, because on the one hand it brings great exposure to what, you know, athletes are doing, but on the other hand it does attract an element of weird creepy guys, especially following young girls on social media. And when you couple that with GPS tracking software like Strava, like it got me thinking like, oh my God, this is like a whole new level of creep that I never even thought about.
Yeah. And the Wahoo even has that thing now. I don't have one, but friends have said where it'll flash up and be like, you know, so-and-so is coming and they're on the other side of the road and you can see their screen name, which is just extra creepy. Like you'd be able to shout their name out across to the other side of the road. But yeah, I guess you're putting yourself out there and perhaps sometimes you should really think about if that's the right thing to be doing. But like you say, it's giving exposure to the sport. So yeah, it's a hard one to balance, isn't it?
What is your thoughts on social media? Because I know within the Irish track team, there has been, I suppose, in contrast to other cycling teams, if you were to add up all the followers across the Irish track team versus all the followers in any other track team, I think you guys could be world number one ranked.
I don't know if I'm bringing any of them, but yeah, we could be.
Well, that's why I thought your perspective on it's interesting, because you seem to have largely opted out of the, you know, social media game that other girls on the team have decided to play quite heavily.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like a conscious decision or anything, but I just prefer to like kind of crack on, and I don't know. If I have something to say, I'll say it, but I think I'm quite dull, so nobody really needs to know my day-to-day business.
Yeah, but I think Instagram is a strange platform because it's, you know, it's a lot of times it's the illusion of something, whether it's the illusion of success, it's the illusion of a happy life, the illusion of wealth, whereas I don't know if you're kind of tongue-in-cheek dismissing saying I don't think my life's that interesting, but is the life of anyone in Instagram that interesting? It's it's a very manicured platform.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're only putting the best bits on. And I think sometimes even we'd be guilty of that. Like, it probably often looks like to outsiders that all we do is sit in the cafe, but I'm not able to film when I'm doing a really hard effort or take a picture. So I am taking a picture when I'm sat about. And sometimes I think that perhaps that gives off the wrong impression because it looks like we're not working hard. If that makes sense, like you're only, like you say, only putting elements of your day up.
I had this year's Irish Road Champion, Imogen Cotter, on the podcast a few months ago, and she was talking about really struggling with aspects of social media because she's heavily gone down the Instagram road as well. And she was talking about how some of the girls in the peloton have just said incredibly mean things to her. Off, like, basically she's only got opportunities because of her social following. And
yeah,
you know, do you find it frustrating being teammates with the girls that have such a focus on it, or is it just let them off, or are you seeing them getting much hostility?
No, like I would think the complete opposite. Like I've trained with Imogen and lived with Imogen, and I know how hard she works. So if somebody has thought that from the outside, then that's them, you know, taking what they want from, I guess, from social media and making a judgment, because that's not the case at all with her. And the same with anybody else. Like, I guess Orla would be the one with the biggest following, and I know how hard she works, and it's probably the same, it looks like, and people are always calling out that she's just going out for food and stuff, but I know that she works really hard as well. So I guess if you're putting yourself out there, you have to kind of expect to take that criticism, but at the same time it's a judgment that isn't always based fully on your actions or the truth that's going on.
Yeah, it's definitely a limitation of the platform. It's actually one of the reasons I really enjoy podcasting. It's, you know, with a picture and a caption, it's very easy to take that out of context, but I can spend all day clarifying a point from any single different angle. If somebody actually has an issue, you can bring them on and interview them, and you can, you know, you can really unpeel the layers of an issue rather than being a very, you know, reductionist.
Even like the tone of voice and stuff is so lost, isn't it? And I think I find that hard sometimes. Like, I'm quite a sarcastic person, and I wouldn't really be able to convey that via an Instagram post without sounding like, I don't know, ungrateful or rude.
Well, I think the whole COVID debate is a very good example of the limitations of like picture format with short text. It's impossible to express any sort of dissenting opinion on government policy in picture form like that without coming across like a crazy conspiracy theory tinfoil hat. But in a longer form format, you get to actually debate the nuances of an issue and break down, and, you know, kind of move away from those reductionist arguments.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Let's chat about your cycling career. How did you get into cycling?
I have done triathlon since I was 11. And then until about 21, 22, and it was my last year at university, I went to Manchester Met. And I just started doing some local crit racing. And I think I won like the second crit race that I did. And this guy, flex. Shout out to me. No, there's a point to this. A guy came up to me afterwards and was like, oh, hey, would you like to be on my team? And I literally had no idea who this guy was or like what the team was. Or really,
this is one of the creeps we were talking about at the start.
I should really watch out more, but anyway, it all worked out fine. The race that he was talking about was that the Lincoln GP, which I suppose is a pretty big race in the British calendar. And then the week after that, I was in doing the Tour Series crits. So it was a bit of a, like, I don't know, baptism of fire.
That's
and
a
I
big
didn't
baptism
really know.
Of fire.
Yeah, I had no idea what I was doing, and like I was a total Fred. But I think sometimes, your naivety gets you a long way, doesn't it? And you're not second guessing yourself, and you just kind of go for it.
Did you have any challenges getting into cycling? Because I know, you know, I need to just look at our client roster, our podcast downloads, you know, anecdotally, group spins. It's a massively male dominated sport. And, you know, you've the idea of wearing completely skin tight kit. So you add in the trying to infiltrate a totally male dominated sport, and then maybe some body insecurities around wearing this, you know, completely figure hugging clothes. I think it could be very challenging for girls to start cycling. Did you have any of those hang-ups?
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, actually, cycling was kind of wearing more clothes because I'd been a swimmer, so you're literally wearing as little as possible. And then triathlon is wearing a skin suit with no sleeves or anything. So, yeah, I guess I didn't feel like that. But we were talking about that the other week, actually, that, like, there are so many, like, kind of rules to cycling that take a new person a long time to learn, and I think can be quite alienating, or, you know, like, scary to join a club, because people will be like, oh, they've got their glasses underneath their helmet strap and they haven't got their socks out here and they've got knickers on under their bib shorts or whatever. Like, there are a lot of rules that people don't tell you, and you just have to kind of learn, and I don't know, feel embarrassed or awkward as you're learning it. But yeah, I don't think I did anything too crazy.
I definitely, like, done a lot of stupid stuff when I was starting. I remember I got all my stuff as a hand-me-down, and my local cycling club was Swords, and I was, like, decked out. So I looked like I kind of knew what I was doing because of all the handout kit. And, but it was the first time I'd ever used clip-in pedals. So you can see where this story is going.
Yeah.
So the guys are meeting at 8:30 or whatever. So I rock up 8:29. Right up to the front of the group, and then I just stack it down on the ground, couldn't clip out the pedals. But I had that.
I think we've all been there, haven't we?
But it's that right day passage. I still see some of the guys that were on that group spin now, and anytime they see me, they just say it was the funniest group spin ever. Because I'd only ever seen bike races on TV. I'd never seen a group spin on TV. I'd never even heard of a group spin.
Yeah.
So
that's, like, true, actually, yeah.
They'd be going up a hill and I'd be attacking on the grass on the wrong side of the road.
No.
Oh, it was tragic. It was tragic. I think we do have more information now.
Yeah, definitely. And even, you know, you can kind of become some sort of level and fitness from doing stuff at home. Like, I think Zwift's brought in, rightly or wrongly, when people think about club spins, a lot of people to cycling. And in the end, they'll go out and ride on the road. But they'll be strong and be aware of cycling. And I guess then they just learn the group etiquette and stuff.
Yeah, I launched a Saturday group spin. This is like a Roadman cycling club spin. And we do a Saturday morning, just a coffee shop ride. It's 3 hours. But I'm pushing hard to try and get more girls on this spin and more girls involved in it. But you do see a lot of girls turn up once or twice. And then it's a very, how do I say this? Spermy, seamy environment. It's just, it's too many ads.
It is. I don't think I've ever been in a club where there's been, like, more than two or three girls. Like, I'll very often be the only girl on the ride. And I get used to it, and you're used to talking to lads. But I think, yeah, it would be intimidating if you're new to the sport. Because I feel like now I know I can hold my own and I'm not going to get dropped.
Yeah.
But if you're new, that's not the case, isn't it? And then you're around a bunch of men. I think it would be very intimidating.
It was actually amazing over in Girona. I was out on one or two spins and it was almost all girls on the spin. And I was like, this is crazy. I'm like, there's only like two boys in a 10-person group. I was like, this is totally different.
Oh, that's so nice.
A lot of the girls were Irish as well, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a big group of people out there now. Yeah. Yeah, it's good to see.
We got the competing bases, Mallorca and Girona.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I'll have to make it out there someday.
So the setup in Mallorca, for anyone who hasn't been there, I've been a couple of times when I was piloting on the front of the tandem. So I kind of have a rough idea what the setup is, but how many of you guys on the Irish national track team are based in Mallorca? And then as a follow-on to that, what's a typical day look like, or is there such a thing?
Yeah, so at the moment, there's us TP girls out here, and kind of everybody else is working at home or racing away and stuff. So at the minute, it's myself, Emily Kay, Kelly Murphy, and Mia Griffin out here. So a typical day at the moment, we're on a track camp, so we'll be on track three or so times a week. So we'll spin down there, which is like a 50-minute ride, depending if there's a headwind or a tailwind. And then the track session's 3 hours, and then we'll spin back. Depending on the day, we might have a session in the afternoon or evening. And then the rest of the week will be the efforts and gym, or a long endurance rides and efforts.
So it's pretty full on. There's no balancing part-time jobs around this sort of schedule.
No way. And a few of the girls study and stuff, But yeah, I think you're kind of just so wrecked the rest of the time that, yeah, if you were trying to hold down a job, it would be impossible.
And who's running the track sessions for the Irish team out there?
We've been having a bit of a shift around at the moment, but we've got David Muntaner helping us out quite a bit. So that's been really good.
Awesome. Ex-world champion. It's going to be good.
Yeah. Yep. Pretty decent guy to have helping us out.
Announcement time in the middle of the podcast. It's that brief intermission period. Two things I'd like to just call your attention to in the middle of the podcast. One, if you'd like to get access to our secret podcast, which is dropping once a week, this week's episode is about why you're suffering from mental fatigue and how you can combat that. It's easy to get access to it. All you got to do is head on over to patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh and you can get access there. Secondly, and this one makes such a big difference, we had a consultant in on the podcast and he said a big thing we're not doing well, we're doing a lot of things well, but a big thing we're not doing well is liking, subscribing and reviewing the podcast over on iTunes, Apple. So even if you're not listening to the podcast on Apple, I'd ask you to head on over there, drop a review, drop a rating and subscribe to it over there. Okay, let's get back to chatting with Alice.
So Cycling Ireland's in a little bit of a period of transition because they had a high performance director from basically when I started cycling. I think Brian Nugent was the high performance director and mm-hmm. he's recently stepped aside. How much upheaval is that for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit because, yeah, the Team Pursuit team was his passion and everything. But for him personally, I think it was the right time for him to go. But yeah, we were sad to see him go because the Team Pursuit team was, you know, making big strides and stuff, and it was his passion project. But we've all carried on and had new coaches and things, so it's all moving along well.
Is there a worry among the girls that the track team was Nugent's project and maybe the next high performance director won't have such an emphasis on women's Team Pursuit?
I mean, I guess so. There's always that possibility, but I don't know. If you look at the results that we've had recently, then I think they speak for themselves. So personally, I'm not worried about that. I think we'll find a way to keep it going.
Are you looking at zooming out a little bit and looking at the Team Pursuit's a funny one because it's kind of balancing, you know, the your individual ambitions against the wider team ambitions. Like you could be flying, but the team isn't going super well. If you zoom out and look at your sort of goals for the next 4 years, are they all wrapped up in that in the team setting, or do you have your own individual goals as well?
Yeah, I think Team Pursuit is the priority, and that's what we want to qualify for Paris. But I'll continue racing on the road, and I think it's a good compliment to my track fitness and things. But yeah, I'd like to catch a few results on the road this year because last few seasons has been COVID, but then limited chances to race because we've been cracking on with the Team Pursuit stuff. So I think this season I'll be able to have a few more opportunities to get a big block in the road done.
So are you still with the Belgian Continental team? I think they rebranded from Ruupol, did they?
Yep, so Illy Bikes.
Cool.
Called, yes.
So how's your program looking for them?
Yeah, good. We haven't gotten through the whole summer yet, but the front end of the program looks like we'll be starting with the Belgian Classic. So I'll start with Omloop, Het Nieuwsblad, Le Samen and Hegeland as well, I think.
Amazing. Hegeland looks rough. I've never raced it, but it's twisty.
Yeah, savage. No, I like to start with those ones, like, I don't know. It would be just, actually, we start in Spain for a smaller race in February. But yeah, it's a good way to start, like, I don't know, rip the plaster off, I guess.
How frustrating is the female scene versus the male scene? Like a lack of opportunities, pay parity, or is it improving?
I think it's improving. I mean, the pay thing is obviously always an issue, and I guess we're lucky that we're able to be funded for the track because I really don't know how some girls find the motivation and like balancing a job and things and able to compete on the road. Like it's very impressive. So I'm grateful for that. But at the same time, it shouldn't be reliant on the fact that you're doing a track program and a road program. And really, the road program for me is like a hobby, if you think of it like that, because you're not being paid and everything you, you pay for everything yourself. Like the equipment's provided. If I need to get to Belgium, or even the PCR test last year was just ridiculous.
Well, they start adding up a lot.
Yeah. Like, I honestly think I spent over $1,000 last year on PCRs.
You need a PCR sponsor.
Yeah, really.
And I think what's interesting with cycling at the moment is the model is completely fucked for male pro cycling and female pro cycling. Sponsorship seems to be more, you know, charity or philanthropy. You see teams like Quebec Assos gone bust this year. But the girls and the Instagram accounts they're building, not just specifically your Shack girls, but some of the other girls in cycling, from a brand point of view, they're getting so much attention that we could be at the beginning stages of a totally new model where you actually start giving some return on investment to sponsors. Like if I sell tires, if I sell saddles, Whoop, fitness tracking devices, the girls are getting so many impressions on their social accounts. I would say they're far outstripping even, you know, you mentioned Orla Walsh briefly, and, you know, we used to coach Orla, so, and it's brilliant seeing, you know, the amazing career she's building on social, but Orla's impressions must be as big as some of the top world tour riders.
Yeah, definitely. Probably more sometimes, isn't it? It's maybe targeting a different audience, like perhaps your average club rider or someone new to cycling would follow Orla because it's following somebody's journey, whereas they might not be aware of Chantel Black or somebody. Like, it takes you knowing a bit more about the sport to understand who the best riders are, because it doesn't always go on followers and things.
Yeah, I think almost that example you gave nearly illustrates a problem and an opportunity in cycling. You mentioned people Chantel Black. It's kind of, it's the old guard of cycling in this very closed, insular group that's difficult to penetrate. And it feels very elitist. But when you see people like Orla, it almost feels like, oh, that's a normal person. I could get into this sport. Like, you can see the journey, you can see the scars, and you can see the progression, and you're like, oh, this somehow seems achievable. They didn't get teleported here as this ultra athlete.
Yeah. And I suppose it's, I guess, if people are open to sharing their story, because really everybody's the same, like everybody's had to work hard. But yeah, if you're not putting yourself out there, like you say, it looks like that person's always been a superstar, but I'm sure she started riding when she was like 8 and has worked very, very hard.
100%. Alice, what do you do outside training, or is it literally training and recovery? I think people like to get a flavor of how does a day look.
I think it's pretty much that, but I'm big into cooking and baking, and like lots of granny activities like embroidery and drawing and stuff. So pretty chilled, really.
So is that a conscious to stay off your feet, old school kind of, you know, never stand if you can sit, never sit if you can lie down type mentality, or they're just stimulate you a bit
more? When I'm on camp, then we're pretty wrecked, so we wouldn't be out, I don't know, doing things. But when I'm at home, I'd live more normally, I suppose, you know, go and meet up with friends and go out in the afternoons or the evenings and stuff. But when we're on camp, I feel like we're here to work. So resting up and stuff is the priority in between the sessions.
And being part of the Team Pursuit team, do you ever get days where you just wake up and you're like, I am not in the fucking mood for training today. Like, I just don't want to do this. Because as a solo rider, so how do you balance that in the team environment? Because as a solo rider, when you have that day, you're just like, fuck it, I'm flipping my rest days around. I'm going to take an easy day today. But in the team environment, it's not as easy.
No, and actually the group we have here is really good. I think we all like pick each other up, and we're not really ones for moaning. So if somebody's moaning, then you kind of know they're having a bad day and you'd be there to help them and pick them up. So I think that it's lucky in that sense, like you'll always be able to get through the session. But yeah, track's kind of hard for that. Like you can always kind of like float through your efforts and just get them done on the road, can't you? But for the track, especially team pursuit, you need to be really like switched in and alert to deliver the efforts perfectly and ride smoothly, do your changes and stuff. So yeah, it's quite mentally draining. And if you're feeling tired already, it's like the last thing you want to be doing is smashing around.
But yeah, it's not a chilled out environment. I still have nightmares of people shouting numbers at me as I'm going around the track.
Literally, and you're dropping a split and there's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, if anyone hasn't ridden track, like the difference between a 0.2 hundredths of a second sounds like nothing, but it's like the effort to get that back is...
Yeah.
And on the tandem, it's doubly bad. So when the splits start going against you on the tandem, because it's such a creature of motivation, mm-hmm. like you need to start out in the blocks.
It again.
Yeah, like you're 1400 watts out of blocks, and then you need to do, you know, 800-900 watts for the next 30 seconds to get it up to speed, and then you can settle into cruising speed. But when it starts going against you, when you tie up, oh my fucking Lord, I hit one of those foamies on...
Oh God,
I hit one of the Worlds over in Toronto, and oh my God, it's you just don't get back in the right space. No, I didn't come
off. Oh, you just hit into it, okay.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Actually, the other Irish tandem did come off. I don't know how you crash on a fucking track on your own with no one else there, but the Irish tandem actually managed that. And they went down.
I think it must have been hitting the pad, surely. Or rolling a tub or something.
I was actually looking for a sniper in the audience. I thought it could have been.
A rival team.
Yeah. Do you have any... I know a lot of people listen to the podcast. They are working a 9-to-5 job. They're, you know, balancing, you know, relationships, family, social life, and then they're trying to squeeze their training in. And is there any strategies or tips that you use or any of the girls use to get a session done on a day when you don't really feel like doing a session? Just anything that tweaks that motivation?
Yeah, I think just try and break your goals down and think like what this session is going to achieve for you. Like, it's easy to say like, oh, what does one session matter? But if you're skipping one session a week, like that's really adding up, isn't it? Or even knocking half an hour off of each ride, like over the course of the week, that's really going to add up. And I think, yeah, just break your goals down and think what it is that you're working towards. And if it's going, well, for us, like going to the Olympics is the ultimate goal, but you need to think of more short-term goals, because otherwise you're like, oh, well, I'll worry about that in a few weeks' time when I'm feeling fitter. But you need to be doing the work now to be able to reach that end goal. So yeah, I think just break it down and try and take each session by each session.
And how process driven are you versus goal oriented? Like, by that I mean, are you just a get up and do what's in the training peaks and the result will look after itself? Or does the lure of a world championships or a nationals, is that what gets you to do the sessions?
I think, yeah, I'll get up and do what's on my training peaks. And I really trust my coach that he'll get us into the best shape possible. And we always have that. They're always feeding into those bigger goals. So like nationals or world championships and things. So I guess it's process driven. But yeah, there's always that push of extra motivation when you know it's only a month out from worlds or whatever. But yeah, I think I actually train, I don't know if this is bad, but off of guilt a bit. Like, I wouldn't be able to cut my session short or do one less effort because I'll feel so bad about it afterwards. So no matter how much it's hurting, I'll have to do it because I know I'll feel worse later if I haven't done it.
Yeah, that was actually something I struggled with a lot when I was full-time, because I had this guilt going, okay, like if I cut a 5-hour session down to 4 hours, it's like, what the fuck am I doing? I should be back working in law. Like, I'm wasting my time. But often because of that, I didn't listen to my body, where my body was saying, you need a little bit of a rest here, bro. I didn't know where that line was between digging deep to get the last three intervals done versus being sensible and skipping the last three intervals because I'm actually digging myself into a hole.
Yeah. Were you coaching yourself?
No, I had a coach, but
honestly,
looking back, it's my feedback to that coach, you know.
Yeah.
And I know now from coaching people, like, you can look at the data and that paints one picture, but it's chatting to the athlete and the context around that data matters so much.
Yeah, definitely. If you're feeding back that feeling the day before they're able to change the session for you, aren't they? And sometimes, yeah, you need to dig in and push on. And then, like you say, other times you just dig in a hole and it's time for a rest day.
Yeah, like I'm sure you've had many a day doing intervals up Orient, and some days it feels effortless, and other days heart rate looks the same, power looks the same, but mentally absolutely every pedal stroke's a funeral, like.
It's the some days there you just have to crack on.
And I think we are in this weird culture, and I talk about it a lot in the podcast, of trying to take the discomfort out of everything in life. Like, you're trying to replace going outside and training with sitting inside on Zwift. You know, you're trying to replace long endurance rides with adding in extra intensity in the middle of the endurance ride. But at some point, all this needs to be reconciled with the fact that cycling is a hard, almost primal sport that demands uncomfortable periods.
Yeah, definitely. I haven't really ever been on Zwift because I just way prefer to be outside in the cold than be sweating on the turbo.
Yeah, same.
I just can't stand it.
Alice, finally, what's the big plans for this year? What if we chat a year from now, what has to happen between now and then for this to be a kick-ass rock star of a year for you?
I'd like to get a few top 10s in some 1.1s and be pushing for a podium in some 0.2s, and I'd love to do some more road racing as a national team. I think we had a good outing last year at Cresbres, and it's just good to be riding with the girls and seeing like the level of the Irish road racing go up, and there are so many more girls even to be selected that are of high quality. So that would be amazing if we could ride more as a team. And then hopefully we'll do, as a team pursuit squad, the Nations Cups. So I think the first one we'll do is in Glasgow in April. And then we haven't decided what the second one will be. And then that'll lead into Euros and Worlds there at the back end of the year. And I'd love to go to Road Worlds and Road Euros this year, but I don't know if it'll clash again with the track commitments, so we'll see.
Busy year.
I
couldn't believe the standard of the Irish girls when I was out in Girona. It's, you know, and these are girls that are just coming on the scene. Obviously, you know, most of the Irish public are aware of the likes of you and Kelly and Imogen, but there's other Irish girls there, like Orla Walsh, a different Orla Walsh that's riding for UCD.
Yes.
Super strong. Yep. Becky Woods, a triathlete, she's with Velo Revolution. Unbelievable climber.
Yeah.
And these girls are as strong as Cat 2 lads in Ireland. And
yeah, definitely. And there's Fiona as well, and Megan, who stepped up last year. Yeah.
Like, Fiona is so strong, like an incredible descender as well.
Yeah. She's on our team next year with me and Mia. So, and the same with Megan. So that'll be exciting to see her progress. I think she'll have a good year.
So I think it's an exciting time all around for Irish women cycling at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, going up in the past, I've been the only person sent to Euros and Worlds. And like, it's pretty hard to ride alone, but there's no reason now why we can't be sending, you know, 3 or 4 really quality riders to those big events.
It'd be amazing. I know your RuPaul team. Sorry, I forgot the new name of it.
Yeah, Ely Bikes.
Yep. Ely Bikes. I know they're an Irish registered team, but they're Belgium based. But it would be amazing to see an Irish registered, Irish based team that's heading abroad, where it's, you know, a full roster of Irish girls. Because I think it's getting there where the standard and the amount of girls coming through. And when you have the, you know, where we had on post for lads to look at and aspire to, what's that vehicle now that younger girls coming up aspire to? And if you had something like that, I think it's going to pull so many more out of the woodwork.
Definitely. I think you're right, where it's at home and it just seems that much more accessible. Like, it isn't, once you do it, it isn't hard to get over to Belgium, but it is that initial barrier, isn't it? Of like, I don't know, it's scary to leave home and stuff. But if people are coming over from home and going to Europe all together in a group, then yeah, it's good. And it's always good to be around, I don't know, the same culture and the same vibes. It's always hard, isn't it, when you're in Europe, to be different personalities and stuff.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's just so much more difficult. Alice, what is, if anyone wants to follow your journey, if they want to catch up on what's, see how you get on the classics, how do they follow you?
On Instagram, Alice55. Oh, no, that's not it. It's Alice.
I love it.
Sharp. Yeah, Alice Sharp.
Alice, thanks for taking the time for chatting.
Thanks. See you later.
That's it.
Roadman, before you rush off, I want to mention something completely new. We've recently just formed the new Roadman Cycling Club. So there's two elements to this club. One, it's a virtual club. You can join it anywhere in the world. And two, it's an in-person club based in Ireland. So if you're a racing cyclist in Ireland and you're looking for a team to race in the colours of next season, if you're looking to hang out with some amazing people and do group rides on the weekend, go and check it out. It's roadmancycling.com/roadmancc. The link is in the show notes. Hope you can join us as part of the new Roadman Cycling Club.